used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, February 4th, 2018. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my animal-loving vegan co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Today we're featuring interviews with an inspirational man from Chilliwack who used to hunt and is now vegan, thanks to his partner Christine. After that, we speak with Mick McIntyre of Australia, who is in town on his North American tour of a film he made with his partner Kate entitled Kangaroo, which exposes the brutal slaughter of Australia's iconic animal. Stay tuned for those interviews in the next half hour. So Allison, this reminds me of the first interview that we have, which is with Mark Reimer. He's telling a story about how there was one moment when he was hunting and he had a change of heart. And that reminds me of last 2 weeks ago, we had Rob Carruthers on the show and he was in the same situation.
I know, you're finding them 1 week in a row on average. So who's going to be next week's featured hunter of the week?
Well, I mean, I'm excited because I've been an animal rights activist for 4 years now, and I find you start to notice who are the most difficult group of people to try to get to transition, because I feel like people who hunt often have the defense, well, at least I'm hunting an animal that had freedom. At least I'm not supporting that factory farming stuff. And to me, that's not good enough. While, of course, there's a spectrum of animal cruelty, I see it as totally unnecessary for those who actually do have access to grocery stores with beans on the shelves.
Yes, we do have, there are different stages, you could say, of advocacy for animals, and we're speaking more about animal welfare when people talk about how they oppose factory farming, but they wouldn't oppose hunting for your own food in the wild. And you're right, I think it's a two-sided argument. So then when the animal welfare part of the argument doesn't work, you have to go into the deeper issues, and that's when you will encounter people like hunters.
And I find them to be one of the most difficult groups to try to convince. And even if you ask a lot of animal rights activists that are out there all the time trying to veganize people, they'll often say, oh, just don't bother. If someone says they hunt, don't waste your time. Try to find somebody else that's a little bit more on the fence. But I don't want to. So I have been seeking out these people who are former hunters or former fishermen who had a change of heart, and I've asked for their stories about that moment when they looked into the animal's eyes of an animal they just shot and they went, I can't do this anymore. I mean, it makes me wonder, what were you thinking all the previous times that you went to collect
because
an animal?
Because people's brains are wired in certain weird ways where suddenly we have an epiphany, right? And that's actually the wonderment of the human brain, is that we do have the flexibility and malleability of our brains to do that, and the ability for like these little neurons to suddenly spark in our brains where, wow, I just had a revelation and I just thought of something that I had never thought in all of my years of living before. And I encourage that. That's how we get to become better people.
Well, I guess, you know, I shouldn't act like I'm so surprised that these people didn't have this revelation sooner, because look at me. I was only vegan 4 years.
There.
I was only vegan until 4 years ago. So,
yeah, Jen, what were you doing more than your whole life?
And this is a really funny thing. I had this boyfriend years ago, and we would go for dim sum every weekend. And of course, I would get shui mai, which is pork and prawns and little dumplings. And this is the funny thing. We would lay in bed before we went to dim sum and we would watch funny animal videos or cute animal videos. That was our thing. And then after brunch, we would go to the SPCA just to visit the animals.
So that's a huge,
love them so much.
Huge disconnect.
Major
there,
disconnect. Yeah. I'm as bad as the hunters.
And it's good to share your own stories as well, I think, when having conversations with people who you don't agree with, because there is some common ground there. So I don't know how much you got to speak with. I know our interview with him is quite short, but I hope that to encourage you to speak with more hunters in the future and to try to do get that common ground with, okay, so what is there something that we can agree with and go from there. I encourage productive conversations with hunters. yeah. to myself. So if any hunter wants to talk to me, please do, because I encourage and I value thoughtful conversations, whether it's coming, I mean, their way of thinking does not have to be the same as mine, but it's nice to find some common ground and go from there.
Right. Well, do you have any people in your life who hunt or fish? You're from a fishing town, right?
Well, I'm from a fishing family.
Okay, let's hear about
so,
that.
Well, I grew up fishing with my parents. My parents were totally into fishing because they grow their own food. I mean, they grow all their vegetables. They have a huge garden, and they believe in, they or always did, I mean, they don't fish anymore, but they always believed in killing their own food, well, specifically fish, because in the North Island, North Vancouver Island is the fishing capital of the world, so tourism is a large part of our, fishing is a large part of our tourism industry there, but they did it as a lifestyle. I grew up going, my dad had boats when we were growing up. He would take us out into the ocean and we would fish off there. We'd fish off the dock a lot at the marina. And I have memories of me and my little sister, 2 years younger than me, seeing, like, we would catch a lot of fish off the dock because they're just right there, bass, and they're, and of course, trout fishing, like in the lake too. That would be going into a boat, into mm-hmm. the lakes. We had little boats. And I have memories. Okay, this is my most vivid memory as a child is just, you know, kind of doing what the parents tell you to do, but then also realizing that I'm connecting in my brain that my parents are pulling these fish out. They're putting them in the bucket, especially when we were in the boat, seeing them like flapping around in the bucket, but then they would still be flapping around in the bucket when we took them home. And then that's when my parents might start bashing in their heads with some big bat or something mm-hmm. like that. To basically put them out of their misery, because I remember seeing them, you know, fish, I don't know how fish breathe with their gills out in the air, because I don't think they can.
And no, they're suffocating.
They're suffocating. They would suffocate for hours, and I would remember seeing that and knowing in my little tiny child heart that this animal is suffocating and is in pain, mm-hmm. and why does this have to happen? And these are things that you might not question when you're so young, but then you start to as you're older. And then just asking myself more questions after that. Like, fishing is a form of hunting. It's no different, mm-hmm. right? And fish, that's where my experience comes from, is just seeing so many fish in my childhood being tortured and then having their heads bashed in, a lot of blood, and then seeing them gutted, and then seeing that on my plate for dinner. Mm-hmm. And I never really cared for the taste of fish. I always needed it as battered as possible
and
fried as possible, so I couldn't
too.
Taste it.
I would try to get
taste.
Away with just eating the batter and hiding the fish under other things
yeah,
on my plate.
The batter was the best part because, yeah, like to this day, I am not a fan of the vegan fish varieties that are out there that I know other people rave about, like yeah. The Guardian and that. I've tried some just to see. There's a smoked salmon out there. We grew up with that too. That's actually quite authentic tasting.
Yeah.
But I'm not a fan of the fishy vegan alternatives.
So you wouldn't want the smoked salmon that's veganized made with
The one that you can get at Whole Foods.
Right? I haven't tried that one. I don't
know.
Oh,
yeah.
About
I have. I tasted that at a... at a food fair that I went to that was debuting all the new different things that are coming up. I tasted it just because I will taste things just to so I can say like I tried it and right. recommend it or not. Just like how I tasted the many, many, many years ago we had a vegan or veggie burger at McDonald's debuted in like 1998.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long, long time ago.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, because you weren't born yet.
I was born in 78.
Okay.
Thank you.
I was in university and... but
Allison
since then,
thinks she's really old.
I am really old. I'm totally over the hill here. So that just means I have a lot of experiences. And I remember the bad old days of, because I was a lacto-ovo-vegetarian for a long time. I remember the bad old days of poor meat and dairy substitutes. I remember mm-hmm. buying those big, huge 4-liter containers of Chinese soy milk that tasted like beans. And they only came in 4 liters. I'm pretty sure they still sell those. So you had to use the whole... So like I basically had to have cereal every day in order to use it up. But I was just sort of going by my family's tradition of always having a big, huge container of cow's milk in the fridge, but wanting to transition. This is during my transitional period of, okay, so this is the only non-dairy milk that exists in the store, this yucky, beanie-tasting Chinese soy milk. I'm going to drink it because I am defying the dairy industry, right, at least starting to. And so, you know, it was many, many years of baby steps like that. And then finally, like never looking back to, you know what? I went to our work cafeteria yesterday and I wanted to get, they had these chocolorific smoothies. I had a sweet tooth for something chocolatey yesterday.
Oh, you're usually so disciplined. Yeah, I'm surprised you did that.
Well, if it's in a smoothie, it's healthy, so it doesn't matter, okay?
Okay.
So that's my way of thinking. It had chocolate and peanut butter in it and a banana, and I'm like, I want one of those. But it also had, it said it had Greek yogurt in it, and they do make smoothies that are vegan. I was wondering, why isn't that one today? And I'm like looking at the options and going, there was only one vegan one. I'm like, I want that one. Can't I just have it with no dairy? So I asked her, and she said yes. She'll make me one specific for me for just no dairy. And then I see her going for the Vitamix container that said the Chocolorific. It had already had the previous ingredients in it. Mm-hmm. And I had like a red alarm bell. I'm like, no, that has inklings of Greek yogurt in it. I do not want, like, I'm up to the part of, I am like at the level of veganism where I cannot even think of having a little bit of what was dairy touch
the
my
insides
mouth.
Of your body.
Yeah, the insides of my mouth. Yeah, because that would have been coated with it. And I asked her, can I have one that doesn't have dairy in it? Yeah. Because dairy's a big allergen too. I don't think I had to like explain myself too much on that. But I've gone from, you know, seeing fish being beaten and watching that and witnessing that and taking part of that and witnessing that as a child, right? Mm-hmm. To transitioning to out of the dairy products and now like full level veganism.
Good for
where,
you.
Yeah, where it's it really is a process, and some people progress faster than others, like you did. Mm-hmm. I think you're pretty staunch in your veganism.
Level 10 activist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and level 10 vegan too with that, I think. Yeah, so yeah, for sure.
We all need to be.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
So for some news, Allison, this one's going to excite you. Set to open this month at 2410 Main Street is, drumroll, the Blue Heron Creamery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Karen McCarthy, who's been on the show before. So this is for vegan cheeses. It aims to be a pioneer in the global vegan cheese sector. It was co-founded by Chef Karen McCarthy and Colin Medhurst, who will be working with cashews, almonds, walnuts, pecans, hazelnuts, and coconut milk to create their cheeses. I didn't know you could use all those different kinds of nuts. That sounds really interesting.
You can use any nut to make a cheese.
Why not?
And more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pecans would be good.
I made an almond ricotta recently, and like I had to shell each of those little almonds with my two fingers here, but it tasted really, really good. And that's how she teaches you to do it as well. She taught us that.
That's a lot of work.
Because I took her cheese making workshop. I really highly recommend it if you want to go hardcore into learning how to work with fermentation and nut cheeses. It was very eye opening.
How long does it take when you're fermenting? Is it a 24-hour process to make
it? It can
cheese?
Be. The longer you ferment a cheese, the stinkier and tastier it is. You know that. The stinkiest cheese is the best. And she has her cheese caves that she'll put her cheeses in for like 3 months or whatever. So at this cheese store, you never know what's going to show up. Right now she does a cheese subscription where you order, like you have a subscription of the month, and you never know what's going to be in it because it just kind of depends on what's ready that month.
Oh,
so she decides and she tastes them and she'll go, okay, this one's been in the cave for like 3 months and I think it's just a rank enough for people to eat. So
stinky and rank, not good words, Allison. Never
it
write
is
menus.
When you're talking
never
about
write
cheese.
Menus. It's not a career for you if that's a career in itself. Anyway, more information at blueheroncheese.com. Here's a new story that excites me. A 63-year-old marine park in Choshi City, Japan, is closing its doors after a sharp decline in visitors over the last 7 years.
Wow.
The marine park used to have as many as 300,000 visitors a year, and now it's only seen 50,000 at best. The lack of interest in the park has also resulted in the inability to maintain the facilities. The park is dangerous for the innocent animals forced to live their lives in tanks, but also for the public. So clearly, people are becoming more aware of the sad lives captive marine animals suffer, and that's driving down attendance at marine parks across the globe, most notably SeaWorld, and most recently, the Vancouver Aquarium has announced declining memberships and visits due to pressure by activists.
Right, that I was just going to say, this new story of this marine park shutting down, I think this is the future of what we have here in Vancouver, to be quite honest.
Oh, we're working on it.
Yeah, well, we're getting there, and, mm-hmm. and that was shown in the news this week. I read that story about all the behind the scenes of why they actually made this decision to ban cetaceans. Mm-hmm. It was all money-driven.
And yeah. I'm not speciesist, so let's be very clear. There are other captives in there of different species, and they all
walruses
need to be set
now
free
too.
If they can be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. And here's some good news. In Hawaii, a Senate bill that would get rid of plastic straws is moving forward. The bill passed the Committee on Agriculture and Environment Wednesday afternoon, and it would outlaw the sale and distribution of plastic straws in Hawaii. Any violators would be fined, and violators will also be required to pick up litter and perform community service. What a perfect punishment.
That's great. But first of all, people need to know why straws are suddenly an evil thing. They always have been. Mm-hmm. But when you're not given any other options, that's like going to be a hard transition for people. Like, and Hawaii is very touristic, as you know. Like, there's a mm-hmm. lot of straws. There's a lot of Jamba Juices out there that people need straws for. What are they going
to
do for
Well,
them?
I say no to straws in restaurants now, and it's actually stopped me from ordering smoothie drinks because I then have to eat them with a spoon.
But you know
but
what?
You can bring your own metal straw.
That's what I was doing. I lost it. But I have a metal straw.
Yeah,
and
you can
I keep
it in
my purse.
Or your,
there
if
you go.
If you don't have a purse, you can keep it in your pocket.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought that was really great news, and I want to ask everybody out there to please think about that. When you're in a restaurant, it might be the last thing on your mind when you order your drink, but try to remember to say no straw, and I even say no coaster. They wipe the tables when you're done anyways. Think of all the trees cut down for coasters.
That's a really good point.
I know it sounds like it's not a big deal, but it's just such a silly thing.
And some places are starting to use, like, where did I go recently? We had this really thick, it was like a thick paper mache straw. It was compostable, obviously. So
oh, that's good.
So those are starting to get used.
I
as well.
Had brought a paper one to a restaurant one time, and it was mushy by the time I was done my smoothie.
Well, I think they're meant to be sort of like one use things. So that's more.
Yeah,
I see that being
use.
More realistic than from there because restaurants are going to have to offer something, obviously, right? People
they
need,
will.
People
I don't see why
straws.
They can't have metal straws and they can clean
them
with pipe cleaners.
I declined the straw for the smoothie yesterday because I knew I was just going to gulp it down.
Yeah,
but then unfortunately, I'm like, oh, I've got to recycle this. It came in plastic.
Well, maybe we can carry our own little cups around. You could have had a coffee tumbler for that.
I need
if
to
you were prepared. It's all about
I
being
need
prepared.
To, yeah, it's about being prepared.
Yeah, but you do a lot. We're not going to be hard on you for this one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So we have some events coming up in regards to actually our interview in a few minutes here. Kangaroo, the documentary, February 4th, Sunday, 3 p.m., Van City Theater. Tickets available at VIFF.org. That's Vancouver International Film Festival.org. They range between $11 and $13. I am giving away 3 free tickets if you agree to go vegan for a month. And I will coach you.
That's a great deal, everyone. Like, and to even have Jen's coaching, take her up on that. So how do people get in on that if they want to do that, Jen?
If you're on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, send us a message, say you're interested. And I really want you to be honest. This is the honor system. You have to be vegan for a month, and you'll get a free screening for this Sunday's show. And then I would like to talk to you afterwards, maybe interview you. If you're not on Facebook, email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Anyway, back to my events announcement. So a kangaroo documentary, we are going to be having the filmmakers present at this event. So there's going to be a Q&A session afterwards. I'll be there. Come and meet the filmmakers and ask questions. Saturday, February 17th, Breakfast with Intention at Nectar Juicery from 9:30 to 12:30. Tickets available at Eventbrite on Facebook. This is a vegan event. Very exciting for those that want to learn a little bit more about veganism and being healthy. Thursday, February 22nd from 7 to 9 p.m., learn a little bit more about mushrooms. Mushrooms, Mycelium, and Mycology of Consciousness is the name of the event you can find on Facebook. It's going to be at the Vancouver Convention Center. You can find out about ticket information there as well. Mushrooms are super healthy. Thursday, March the 1st from 6 to 8:30 p.m. This is a really interesting event for our traumatized little animal rights activists in our community. We have a lot of kids that come out and help the animals, and they're vegan kids, and it's hard on all of us to be doing animal rights activism emotionally, but especially for them. They're very sensitive and sweet, and they're often surrounded by other kids who are not vegan or animal rights activists. So this is about understanding anxiety and strategies to support children. Free tickets are available at Eventbrite, and it's going to be taking place at the Justice Institute Auditorium in New West. By the end of the day, I'll have all these events up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And if you have a fundraiser or event you'd like us to announce that supports animals or the environment, please contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or Facebook Animal Voices Vancouver.
I have an event to announce. Can I announce an event? Okay, so I had talked about this a little bit last week, but we kind of ran out of time. So we are putting, and when I say we, this is just me and some random vegans, basically people who want to do good in the world, who live in Vancouver. You might have seen it online, known as the acronym DOGWAB. And I remember Jen, you saying before, like, what does it stand for? Day of Giving Without Arbitrary Borders.
But this is within arbitrary borders.
This is part three, because we have done a part one and a part two already. Part one was like our real, like, we didn't really know what we were doing. We knew we wanted to go out into the streets and feed people really great vegan food. People on the streets of the downtown east side of Vancouver, which is actually our community right here at Co-op Radio.
That's where we are.
We are located right at Columbia and West Hastings, and basically sort of the hub where we made it to last, because we were like a traveling free store. That's what we called ourselves. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole bunch of us. We each had, some of us had different food dishes, and then we were giving out personal toiletry items like mm-hmm. toothbrushes and toothpaste. For this one, I've garnered thousands of actual like shampoos and conditioners and lotions. So
you're a big contributor to this. Thank you.
Well, I really believe that as social activists, we need to extend that beyond what our main niche or interest is. For me is animal rights, but human rights and animal rights go with that. So look on Facebook. I'll post it today on our Animal Voices Vancouver page, and that's it.
And I just want to say, we often get told, what are you doing for humans, when we do animal rights outreach? So here we are. This is what we're doing for humans. Now leave us alone.
Yeah, exactly. And this is happening next weekend. Just want to let you know, February 10th, 11th, and 12th, we will need your help. Thank you.
Today I'm speaking with my friend Mark Reimer, a 49-year-old plumber from Chilliwack. We're friends on Facebook. We haven't actually met in person yet, like many of my animal rights friends, but I'm glad to have you on our show today, Mark. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
So how long have you been vegan?
I've been vegan for 2 years now.
And what inspired your transition to this compassionate lifestyle?
My partner, Christine. I learned she was vegan, so I started doing research, looking into the farming practices and whatnot, and finally seeing the conditions that these poor animals were living in and that I had been a part of. I just couldn't take part in that kind of cruelty anymore, and it didn't make sense to me what I was doing to these creatures that we share this planet with.
That's awesome. Thank you for making that transition.
Yeah.
So I asked you to be on our show today because when I'm doing public outreach in defense of animals and I'm asking people to adopt a vegan lifestyle, I often encounter people who say, I hunt for my meat. And they're saying it in such a way that they think it's more humane and better for the planet, and I'm just going to be satisfied with that and not encourage them to stop hunting. They think I'm simply advocating for the cessation of factory farming, which isn't the case. I don't think that hunting eliminates the unnecessary cruelty, and that is my goal. So you mentioned that you used to hunt in your childhood up until the age of 17. You would go every year. and now you're vegan. So what would you say to people who justify hunting and who also have access to vegan foods such as beans, nuts, grains, vegetables, and fruits?
Yeah, people who justify hunting, they're impossible to approach on this subject usually, and it's ingrained in their heads from an early age. It's like a rite of passage, and you're a man now because you hunt. But there was a time when I hunted that changed me, and I killed this wood duck, and as I approached him, he was still alive, and just looking into his eyes, I could see that he was in pain, and there was a lot of fear there, and that really sunk deep for some reason, and I never hunted again. And, you know, when asked by some hunters I know about the question, where do you get your protein and whatnot, I like to share with them all the different foods that have the protein in them that, you know, you can get from without killing something to get them.
That's awesome. Yeah, so what do you typically eat in a day?
Oh, man, I eat a lot. Like, I love my beans, and I love salad, and, you know, I love my nuts and seeds and whatnot. Love bread, love potatoes, love every vegetable out there. But, yeah, I eat quite a lot, and I love everything in the grocery store.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for offering your unique perspective. It's not easy for me to track down somebody who is male and used to hunt. That's a perspective that we don't see very often, is someone that made the transition from a hunter to veganism. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
You're welcome, Jen.
Okay, we'll talk soon, Mark.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio on 100.5 FM, CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. So, Allison, you and I are in the sort of dating world a little bit. I do a lot of online dating. Let's talk about hunting.
I used to do a lot.
And you used to?
You know,
okay.
Because you know what is the sexiest thing when you're doing online dating?
Yeah.
Is seeing, you know, we were talking about fishing, seeing a profile photo of a man, like, holding a big fish and
smiling.
Sounds
like you're being sarcastic.
Especially if it's, like, a big halibut or something. The bigger, the better. That shows,
like,
you know, shows that he's more masculine.
I like it when they're holding up the horns of an animal head that they just killed.
Oh yeah.
Or maybe,
because it makes them so manly.
Posing
like those horns. If he has horns that big, what else is that big? It makes me wonder.
Or how about posing with a drugged tiger in Thailand?
Or a dolphin, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. I saw somebody the other day who was holding an alligator with its mouth taped shut.
Oh, yeah. That's like...
super
that's
hot.
Super hot.
Oh,
yeah.
Must be compassionate, that guy.
That's what that makes me think, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, God. Anyway, so I actually started taking screenshots of people's dating profiles that are like this, and I'm going to create a collage, and I would like it to be an art project that's public. I need money for this, though, people.
Well,
Help me out. Just
post it online.
Well,
what do you need
money
for?
I'm going to create
It'll go viral.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do, like, a Facebook photo album to begin with. And then, but wouldn't
with
it be
funny
cool?
Funny captions. I can see you doing that.
Oh, that would be good. Wouldn't it be cool, though, if this got into the Vancouver Art Gallery? What are the chances? What do you think?
Well, it all starts on, like, you can become a star, an artist, an internationally known artiste by just starting online on Facebook.
A dating
things like
artiste.
That happen. Things like that do happen.
Without going to art school?
Yeah, but but you don't really need to, because it's the photographs that will speak for themselves. That will be the art and your hilarious captions.
So I might need a lawyer.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to get sued.
Well, you've had some good conversations with those people, right? Because you always make a point of...
I'm very strategic. Yeah.
Such as?
I created a radio show for these people, and I addressed almost every way that animals are exploited for tourism, and I send them the show, but not before I make them feel like we're friends and that I'm not on the side of animals, which is hilarious, because if you read my profile, which most men don't do, you would know I'm an animal rights activist.
They just look at the pictures.
So they fall for it. They're like, oh, she's friendly and she's not going to criticize me.
And that's their fault for not reading the profile.
Well, I know. And they think I'm genuinely interested in the facility that they had that picture taken at when I'm asking questions, and in reality it's because I plan to advocate against that facility.
And you're just getting data
getting
about
info.
It. Yeah,
and then I'm going to do a petition thing and shame that company online
and
thank all my friends.
And thank the guy who introduced you to that facility as being like your undercover insight.
Yeah,
without him, without him knowing.
Just because he can't read someone's profile. They just look at pictures. And who says online dating is just for hooking up? It's for so many things.
Well, it's for animal activism. Yeah. It's for Tindervism. We had an interview about that last week that featured you.
Yeah, and that, the reason, for those who don't know, the reason I'm on this radio show as an employee, I suppose you could say, is because I was a guest talking about online dating as a vegan activist.
That was on our Valentine's Day show about two years ago. So mm-hmm. if you're really interested to learn more about that, which you should be, because it is super interesting, go on our website, animalvoices.org, and
look up Tindervism.
Tindervism, because that's what we called the show. It was our Valentine's show, and that's when Jen debuted.
Yeah. Yeah, there we are. You can do it too. You can Tindervism too, everybody.
A new documentary entitled Kangaroo exposes Australia's dark secret, the slaughter of their iconic kangaroos by the hundreds of thousands in the middle of the night with hunters using high-velocity sniper rifles. Australian filmmakers Kate McIntyre-Clear and Mick McIntyre have been on a North American tour to expose the truth about how Australia treats its kangaroos. Now, like me, you may be wondering why they're talking about this in North America. Well, I was surprised to learn that Americans are the second largest consumers of kangaroo body parts, not only for their meat, but also leather, which I was surprised to learn is commonly used in soccer shoes. Today, we're speaking with co-creator of Kangaroo the Movie, Mick McIntyre. Welcome, Mick.
Good morning.
Tell us about your film.
Well, we set out to make a film about kangaroos. We knew that they are the third most recognizable icon in the world, behind the Eiffel Tower and the Statue of Liberty. So we knew that there was appeal around the world for this magnificent animal. But we also knew that there was another side to the story, and that is the killing of kangaroos. So we set out to tell a story about the kangaroo. But what we didn't know was that the killing of the kangaroos is the largest slaughter of any wildlife on the planet. In fact, one of the first interviews we did was with a government person, a government representative, and he casually dropped it into the interview that about how big this kill was, how big the annual slaughter was. And the more we researched, the more we found out the scale of this commercial exploitation. So our film is a story that celebrates this great animal, but it also uncovers a very dark side, a commercial industry that no one really knows about or talks about.
And what is the general feeling about kangaroo use amongst Australians? I've never been there. I don't know what the feeling is there on that one.
Well, there's not a lot of discussion about the killing or use of kangaroos in Australia. Most Australians don't just think about it in their daily lives, and they certainly don't set out to choose kangaroo products over other products. Generally, it's just brought up in the country because there's been a very strong indoctrination over the years that there are too many kangaroos, that they in fact are a threat to agriculture and that they are a pest. And you know, the more we researched this, the more we found that this basically wasn't true, that it was a messaging that was very successfully used by the agricultural industry to justify, if you like, the killing of the kangaroos. So it turns into like a country issue, and most people are sort of sympathetic to the plight of the farmer. So the kangaroo basically comes last in general discussion in Australia.
And so I imagine before you came for this North American tour, you did a tour in Australia with your film screenings, is that right?
No, we've funny enough, the things have worked out that the release is in North America first.
Okay.
And we're releasing in Australia in March. And look, it's been an incredible response by Americans. We've had fantastic reviews in the media. We got reviewed in the New York Times and the LA Times, and most of the reviews have been about, you know, the shock and the expose side of the story, that no one had any idea of the scale of what's going on in Australia. So, and the audience response on our screening tour has been just as positive, and people are really keen to find out more about what's going on with kangaroos in Australia.
And so when you're telling your friends or anyone else about it back in Australia, how have you been received?
Well, we've sort of been flying under the radar a little bit because it is such a polarizing topic in Australia that, as I said, the kangaroo usually comes up last in the list of priorities for Australians, and it's a controversial topic. You know, it's not something you choose to bring up at a dinner party because you're going to get such polarizing views. So we set out to not do a lot of public outreach while we're making it because we wanted the film to speak for itself. And we only released the film's trailer just before Christmas. And it's going to be an interesting time when we do release the film in Australia.
And have you received any threats or backlash from those who profit from killing kangaroos?
Well, it's certainly caused an interesting debate on social media when we released the trailer. I think the comments that we're getting, the trolling we're getting on social media, gives us a snapshot of what to expect when the film is released. And so, you know, as filmmakers, we're out, our job is to tell the story, present the facts, and let people have that discussion amongst themselves. And clearly, that's already started on social media. So, yeah, we await the public's response when we go back to Australia for the film's release.
Mm-hmm. And so in the film, I watched it last week, and we see many close calls in rural areas with bullets flying onto private farmland. People don't even feel safe on their own property. Has there been any police arrests or any policy change in regard to this reckless behavior?
Well, yeah, you bring up an interesting point. What we found in making this film is that if you own a country property, you are more than likely going to be asked by shooters if they can come onto your property and kill kangaroos. And, you know, that, and you are entitled to say no, but what happens is that your neighbouring properties might say yes. So what happens is, and if you border, you know, like if you're close to the bordering property where they are shooting kangaroos, yes, it can be quite, an intimidating thing to happen. And we feature one such property in our film where they are shooting very close to their house because their house is close to the border of the property. And it's something that comes up quite a bit. And as far as we know, there isn't a lot of action that gets taken place because the hunting is regulated by the authorities. So we're unaware of any police action against this.
Mm-hmm. So I certainly wouldn't want to be a homeowner out there, although the landscape was beautiful and I can see the temptation, and especially the person that you featured in the film. They had such a beautiful property and home, and it's too bad that that's what we have to deal with.
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, that's part of the discussion that we think that we want to have as Australians, that, you know, what we learned was that there was just the more we travelled around the countryside and filmed and interviewed people, we found that the first reaction to having kangaroos on your property most of the time was that they were a problem and that you had to get rid of them. There was no sort of discussion about the fact that these are a native species that have been around a lot longer than humans, and that possibly there could be a chance of coexisting with this native species. So that was quite shocking to us. I hope that this film can create some discussion about the possibilities of coexisting with this herbivore that's, you know, not a predator,
mm-hmm.
And understand the contribution that they make to the ecosystem. So, this perception that they are everywhere and the perception that they are a pest is clearly not true. And so, yeah, we look forward to that discussion because they are a magnificent animal and they have a very important part on the Australian landscape. And, Yeah, when you see the film, you'll be shocked at the level of exploitation and this level of hatred towards this magnificent icon.
Right. Well, speaking of exploitation, we often deal with situations where it's up to curbing consumer habits when it comes to defending wildlife or any animals. So in your film, we learned that the Russian government is lab testing revealed that the meat was unhygienic. And was it therefore banned all across Russia? I can't remember.
Yeah, so basically there was some independent meat testing done in random supermarkets in Australia where the kangaroo meat was for sale. And the independent tests came back with positive testings for E. coli and Salmonella, which basically means that meat is unhealthy for humans to eat. So, and as a result, the Russian government banned the import of kangaroo meat, and that ban still is in place today. And that's mainly because the kangaroo industry butcher the animals in the field, which means they're not butchered in a hygienic environment. So basically that's where the infestation happens. And so, yeah, so the ban still applies in Russia, but there's plenty of other countries that are still importing kangaroo meat. The European Union countries are the biggest importers of kangaroo meat, followed by the United States, who are the second largest importer of kangaroo products. So that's another reason why we're here in North America, because it's very relevant to Americans, because we thought that Americans would like to know that they are such large users of kangaroo products. And it also applies, I know I'm talking to you in Canada, and it also applies to Canada because we know it's readily available in dog food in Canada. We know that there's meat being imported into Canada for human consumption. So it also applies to Canadian listeners as well. So this is an international topic about a wildlife species that, you know, is under threat from this commercial exploitation.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you said it's available in our pet food. I had no idea. And I think next time I go to the store, I will look into that, check out the ingredients and see if it is readily available. I was looking on social media for something entirely different. And ironically, I came up with a post from an animal rights activist about a year ago. She had written that there's a restaurant downtown Vancouver that was selling kangaroo carpaccio. So I went to that restaurant website to see if it was still there. It's no longer on their menu. But just to let you know, I've never heard of kangaroo meat served here. It seems kind of unusual. So it's interesting to hear that it is actually quite popular.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that we have to do as documentary filmmakers is always expose something new, because mm-hmm. That's what documentaries are meant to do, and we certainly think that we're doing that, because we certainly think that people who watch the film have no idea. And so it's certainly, it's going to be interesting to see how people react when they learn that it is readily available in their country and in their pet food and in their shoes and in their supermarkets. So, as I said earlier, this is an international wildlife issue. This is something that, you know, when you put a price on wildlife, the wildlife always comes second. And you look through the history, whether it be elephants or whales, and we as filmmakers now realize we don't want that to happen to the kangaroo.
Mm-hmm. Animals are so oppressed in this world. It really is sad. They're just so innocent.
Yeah, well, look, it was a great privilege to spend time with this magnificent species. We got to film them in the magnificent natural surroundings in the national parks, and I hope we portray them in a beautiful way on the big screen. And but unfortunately, there's this dark secret about them that that was really shocking to us when we made the film, and we certainly hope that it generates the discussion that needs to happen.
Well, the cinematography and drone footage was absolutely beautiful. This is a really high-quality documentary. And for our listeners out there, you can see the documentary Kangaroo this Sunday, February 4th, 3 p.m., Van City Theatre. Tickets are still available on the Vancouver International Film Festival website. That's VIFF, V-I-F-F. And our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Mick and his partner Kate will be in attendance for a post-film discussion, and we hope to see everyone there. Thank you so much for your time today, Mick.
Next, we're going to play a 2012 speech by Australian philanthropist, former VP of Citibank and general manager of Citicorp. He is a vegan activist, Philip Wallen. He's speaking about at an event entitled Animals Should Be Off the Menu Debate at the Wheeler Center for Books, Writing, and Ideas. This speech is on YouTube, and it is so widely shared by animal rights activists to their friends who are not yet vegan. It is that powerful, so please listen and enjoy.
King Lear, late at night on the cliffs, asks the blind Earl of Gloucester, "How do you see the world?" And the blind man Gloucester replies, "I see it feelingly." And shouldn't we all? Animals must be off the menu because tonight they are screaming in terror in the slaughterhouses, in crates and in cages. Vile, ignoble gulags of despair. You see, I heard the screams of my dying father as his body was ravaged by the cancer that killed him. And I realized I'd heard those screams before. In the slaughterhouse, their eyes stabbed out and their tendons slashed, on the cattle ships to the Middle East, and the dying mother wail as a harpoon explodes in her brain as she calls out to her calf. Their cries were the cries of my father. And I discovered that when we suffer as equals. And in their capacity to suffer, a dog is a pig, is a bear, is a boy. Meat today is the new asbestos, more murderous than tobacco. CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide from the livestock industry are killing our oceans with acidic, hypoxic dead zones. 90% of small fish are ground up into pellets to feed to livestock. Vegetarian cows today are the world's largest ocean predators. The oceans are dying in our time. By 2048, all our fisheries will be dead, the lungs and the arteries of the earth. Billions of bouncy little chicks are ground up alive simply because they are male. Only 100 billion people have ever lived. 7 billion people live today. And yet we torture and kill 2 billion sentient living beings every week. 10,000 entire species are wiped out every year because of the actions of one. And we are now facing the 6th mass extinction in cosmological history. If any other organism did this, a biologist would call them a virus. It is a crime against humanity of unimaginable proportions. But happily, the world is changing. 10 years ago, Twitter was a bird sound. WWW was a stuck keyboard. Cloud was in the sky. 4G was a parking space. Google was a baby's burp. Skype was a typo. And Al-Qaeda was my plumber. Victor Hugo said, "There is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come." Well, animal rights today is now the greatest social justice issue since the abolition of slavery. Do you know there are over 600 million vegetarians in this world, and that is bigger than the United States, England, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all put together. If we were one nation, we would be bigger than the 27 nations of the European Union. Can you believe that? And despite this massive demographic footprint, we are still drowned out by the raucous hunt and shoot and killing cartels who believe that violence is the answer when it should not even be a question. Meat kills animals, kills us, and is killing our economies. Medicare has already bankrupted the United States. They will need $8 trillion invested in Treasury bills just to pay the interest, and they have precisely zero. They could shut down every school, Army, Navy, Air Force, Homeland Security, Marines, CIA, and FBI, and they still will not have the money to pay their doctor bills. And our Cornell and Harvard say that the optimum amount of meat in a healthy human diet is precisely zero. Water, as you know, is the new oil. Nations will soon be going to war for it. Underground aquifers that took millions of years to fill are now running dry. It takes 50,000 liters of precious drinking water to make 1 kilo of beef. Today, 1 billion people are hungry. 20 million people will die from malnutrition. Cutting meat by only 10% will feed 100 million people, and eliminating meat will end starvation forever. If everyone ate a Western diet, we would need two planet Earths to feed us. We've only got one, and she is dying. Greenhouse gas emissions from livestock is 50% greater than transport, as Peter said. Cars, trains, buses, ships, lorries, the whole lot. And as I travel around the world, I see poor countries who sell their grain to the West while their own children starve in their arms. And the West feeds it to livestock so we can eat a steak? Am I the only one who sees this as a crime? Believe me, every morsel of meat we eat is slapping the tear-stained face of a hungry child. When I look into her eyes, do I remain silent? The earth can produce enough food for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. We are facing the perfect storm. If any nation had developed weapons that could wreak such havoc on the planet, we would launch a preemptive military strike and bomb it back into the Bronze Age. But it's not a rogue state. It's an industry. The good news is we don't have to bomb it. We can just stop buying it. Sir George Bush was wrong. The axis of evil does not run through Iraq, Iran, or North Korea. It runs through our dining tables. Weapons of mass destruction are our knives and forks. Our proposition is the Swiss Army knife of the future. It solves our environmental, water, human health problems, and ends cruelty forever. The Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. This cruel, disgusting industry will end because we run out of excuses. Meat is like the 1 and 2 cent coins. It costs more to make than it's worth. And I come from the bush. Farmers are the ones with the most to gain. Farming won't end, it would boom. Only the product line will change. Farmers would make so much money, they won't even bother counting it, and I'd be the first to applaud them. Governments would love us. New industries would emerge and flourish. Health insurance premiums would plummet. Hospital waiting lists would disappear. Hell, we'd be so healthy, we'd have to shoot someone just to start a cemetery. So tonight I have two challenges for the opposition. Two challenges. Meat causes a wide range of cancers and heart disease. Would they name one disease caused by a vegetarian diet? And two, I'm funding the Earthlings trilogy. If the opposition is so sure of their ground, I challenge them to send a copy of the Earthlings DVD to all their colleagues and all their customers. Go on, I dare you. Animals are not just other species, they are other nations, and we murder them at our peril. The peace map is drawn on a menu. Peace is not just the absence of war, it is the presence of justice. Justice must be blind to race, color, religion, or species. If she's not blind, she will be a weapon of terror. And tonight, there is unimaginable terror in those ghastly Guantanamos we call factory farms or slaughterhouses. Believe me, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, we wouldn't be having this debate tonight. You see, I believe another world is possible. And on a quiet night, I can hear her breathing. Let's get animals off the menu and out of these torture chambers. Please vote tonight for those who have no voice. Thank you.
I have goosebumps from that speech. How about you, Allison?
Yeah, I love that speech every time I hear it. It's one of the best for sure.
And I love that he mentions Earthlings. That's a documentary that you can find on Vimeo for free. It's life-changing. It made me vegan. Please check it out. So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us for our next show next Friday, where our producer Jillian Walters is doing a show on Black History Month featuring an interview with Genesis Butler, the vegan kid. You can look her up on TED Talks on YouTube. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
And can you remind us once again how people can win a free ticket to the film and get mentoring from you?
Yes. If you are willing to go vegan for 1 month, I will coach you and I will give you a free ticket for the film on Sunday, which we mentioned in the interview we did today. The film is Kangaroo. It's at 3 o'clock Sunday. You can get tickets, or if, for those of you that aren't looking to win one, you can get your tickets at vif.org.
I know a guy named Todd who might be into that for sure.
He's not vegan yet, and he'll he might do this. Okay.
Yep,
sounds good.
Pass it on.
Okay, so you can contact us on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, if you want to take part in that.
To end the show today, we have a song called Tall Trees by Canadian artist Matt Mays.
A band from Nova Scotia who was actually at the Commodore last Saturday, and I went. It was one of the best shows I've ever been to. Didn't your friend go to that?
Yeah, and he's vegan.
Oh, Matt right Mays. On. Matt Mays is vegan. If I'd known that, I would have probably done something.
We can have him on the show.
I might have run around on stage naked or something. I don't know.
But we can at least play a song.
We can. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.